So now is the moment we've all been waiting for, right? So, Country Road brings us home. We are home here today in our spiritual, physical home, connected by universal love and heart. And as I look at who is speaking this morning, Reverend Dr. Carolyn McEwen Fish, who is my teacher, all through my ministry training, and Reverend Terry, my student friend, as we went through ministry. And so there is such a connection in this particular moment, I feel, for me personally. And so who knows better than the way it works than Dr. Carolyn and Reverend Terry? So please help me welcome them to present The Way It Works.
Oh, thanks, Michael. That was nice. And girlfriend, you did something to my heart. Did anybody else feel it? Oh, my God. Oh. I have this, I don't know, this warm energy just going everywhere. Thank you. So we're home. Yippee. Oh, I forgot to bring my books. There's two things I would like to address before I actually get started. This is Martin Luther King weekend, and with this warm feeling in my heart, I just think we need to take a moment and thank him in our spirit for the work that he's done and has brought us to this point where we have a lot more work to do. So let's just go within and give thanks and know that something wonderful is happening because we have this opportunity. Will you join with me? And we're so grateful. And so it is. And then the other thing, it's kind of a little business thing, but Ann addressed it. And it's this idea that Reverend Kathy, at our last practitioner's retreat a week ago Saturday, assigned each one of the practitioners 12 names out of our membership booklet. And now we have our groupies. So I emailed my group and said I'm their practitioner and I'm here to help, serve, do treatment, whatever. And I've done several, and it's so fun to be able. And actually, there was only two people on my list I don't know. So that made it even nicer. But I do get to meet two new people, so that'll be good. Now, you know I'm Carolyn McEwen Fish, and last week, our practitioner, John Boyle, gave a wonderful lesson on the thing itself. And if you weren't here, you really missed a good one, but you can go to the website or the newsletter and click on his picture and get the whole thing. I'm telling you, he just did a smack-up job. So Terry and I get to follow that. Water. Okay. Now, this is what we're doing. This is our Science of Mind textbook by our beloved founder, Dr. Ernest Holmes. And this is what we teach our accredited classes from. And then this is another book that we're using for this month, Living the Science of Mind. It's also by Ernest Holmes. It's a collection, actually, of his writings because this was put together in 1984. Well, He didn't do it because he was dead. He died in 1960. But this man was a prolific writer. And so they took the things that had not necessarily been published and then put together this thing called the Living the Science of Mind. And they say in the introduction it's a little bit easier to read because it's taken from some of his talks that he did, which he was an orator. Is that the right word? Yes. He went to school to learn how to do that. But he loved this teaching of the science of mind so much that he would just get started, and he wouldn't stop. I mean, he talked and talked and talked, and it was wonderful. But it was recorded and all written down and not all published in here. So this is what we're doing. And I took a lot of information, especially from this one. So I've got to put these down. And I want to recap what John said last week. He reminded us there really is nothing supernatural about this study of the science of mind because it's based on universal principles. He told us that the divine nature of God is in every person, not just some. It's every person, even DT. We also learned, everybody take a deep breath, surround him in light and love, wisdom. We learned that thought is creative, so we need to be very careful about what we think. Got it? We also learned that even though we talk about the conscious mind and the subjective mind, there are not two minds, just two names with different functions. And so one name is the conscious mind that directs our thought. It's a thinking aspect that tunes into the universal mind that knows all, that is all, that's the presence of love and everything. And then the subjective mind that takes the impressions of what it is that we're thinking, the direction that we're going, and finds creative ways to bring those thoughts into our experience with situations and conditions. I need to slow down. Is there a practitioner in the house? Yeah. Okay. I'm so excited about this talk. Because I'm working with Terry and I don't have to do the whole thing. So, okay. Learning more about these two functions of the one mind working through us is what we're going to be talking about this morning. So I begin on page 37.4 in the Science of Mind textbook, and this is what Dr. Holmes writes. Therefore, our belief sets the limit to our demonstration of a principle which, of itself, is without limit. It is ready to fill everything because it is infinite. So it is not a question of its willingness, nor of its ability. It is entirely a question of our own receptivity. Are we receptive? We really try to be, don't we? And then, this is what's written in Living the Science of Mind, the chapter on thinking affirmatively. There is a power for good in the universe greater than you are, and you can use it. We all believe this. That was written in the book. I question that sometimes. It says we all believe this. The question is, this is such a good question, why do we not use it more effectively? if all things are possible to faith, why do we not have more faith? If affirmative prayers are answered, why do we not always pray affirmatively? Let us try to figure out just how we can be more effectively, how we can more effectively cooperate with the law of mind in action. And that's the end of the quote. So, that's those questions. I mean, why don't we have more faith? And, it, you know, I'm going to question that. Because I think we have all the faith there is. We just use it in the opposite direction of what we need to be doing. We can be very positive in our affirmations. I'll never have enough money. I am sick and tired of this. I'm not going to do it anymore. These are all calls for that subjective mind to take that impressive thought and create something in our world that really isn't what we want. I'll never have enough money. Really? We live in a prosperous universe. We have an abundant Father. I'm sitting here looking at Christine, Reverend Christine. And we were in an airport one time traveling to a minister's conference, and apparently I dropped my ticket to get on the airplane, and I didn't know it. But this man came over and handed it to me, and he said, "You need to take care of your things." He said, "There's a lot of money in that." And I said, "I have a rich father." Well, he just was huffy and puffy and turned around and walked away thinking I was a spoiled brat. Well, we all are heirs to the kingdom. And we just need to be receptive to that. So, that wasn't in my notes. Okay. Terry and Crystal and I created a slide presentation to show you why we haven't been able to use it more effectively all the time, and how to cooperate with the way the law of mind works to effect better changes in our experience in the conditions that we find ourselves in. So I'm going to use myself as an example of the way my thinking didn't allow me to use the principle as effectively as I could through my growing up years. And then David is going to help me by showing us the first slide, which shows this is the truth about me. And oh, you can't see it, but we put it on kind of a yellow background, which represents the light. And also not on the screen, but represented by I am the light of God, are all the qualities, because we're all born with the qualities of God. Now, when I was taking Science of Mind 1, we called it Science of Mind 1 then, back in the day, 1969. I'm going to be in this teaching 50 years next January. Isn't that amazing? I keep thinking about that because I remember when I was 50 and I thought that was so old, but now I'm just this young thing. The light of God. But Dr. Barnum used to tell us the qualities are the three L's, the two P's, and the BJ. Who knows what they are? Okay, let me hear.
Life, love, peace, power, beauty, joy.
Yay! See? They learned something. That's from the Edinburgh Lectures. And the light, life, love, the three L's. The two P's, peace and power, the BJ, beauty and joy. That's what we are in truth. And that light that is in us radiates that when we are receptive to it. Then we're born, of course, and we immediately begin to build our consciousness from the conditions into which we come, our parental DNA comes with us, society marks their stamp on this clean slate of this precious infant as we come into the world. And so I'm going to tell you my first impression. I don't have a conscious memory of this, but I know this happened because my mother told me. And then as I grew and watched my life, I could see where it continued to outplay itself because it became a belief system. I was my mother's first child. No, I'm sorry. I was her second child, second daughter. And she wanted a boy. And so when they told her it was a little girl, she said, I don't want to see her. Yeah. Everybody take a deep breath. Isn't that awful? So after 24 hours, of course, she relented and they brought me to her. And the story goes on. But what happens for that little infant is that impression. It was impressed, the feeling of not being wanted, unloved. And so what I did, began to believe I was unlovable. And see that line going through there and the mark of unlovability blocks out some of the light, doesn't it? Okay. I not only found out that my mother didn't want me, and she told me, and she said, but Carolyn, she said, they gave me gas, and I didn't know what I was doing. And so, of course, I forgave her. I mean, how can you blame your mother for doing that when she's under the influence of gas? But I also learned that I was my father's third daughter. I didn't know it until I was 12 years old that he had a daughter before Marilyn and I were born. And then it was reinforced, probably on a subjective level, when my mother came through the door of our home and had me in her arms, and my baby sister, who was 14 months older than me, took one look at me and screamed and cried and ran to her bedroom and didn't want to see me. So I've got all kinds of unlovability marked on me, unbeknownst to me. In the book, Living the Science of Mind, Dr. Holmes writes, but even the law of good, which is all powerful, can bring you only as much good as you accept. This accepting is an act of your own mind. It is an act of faith. So I put a lot of faith as I grew up and began to see my belief that I wasn't lovable, being acted out in different situations. Go to school, somebody calls you fat, little piggy wiggy. Or, you know, dumb, whatever. I'm not telling you the story to make you sad. Don't be sad, because look at me. I got over it. I got out of it. I want you to see how the impress of thought conditions a life, and how important it is for us to do our spiritual practices. So, in Living the Science of Mind, it goes on to say it is the sum total of all our thinking that we must consider. So this is the consciousness that's being built by these false ideas and beliefs that we gather. And in doing this, one of the first things we learn is that about 90% of our thinking is unconscious. You know, I've never read that before. I was stunned. And yet, I there's something in me that resonates with that. I know it's, the Mayo Clinic used to say that we use about 10% of our brain. So there you go, 90% of our thinking is unconscious. Well, how many of us have an infant or a 2-year-old or a 5-year-old running our lives because we're not aware of these subjective patterns that become established, and then we wonder why we experience what we experience? So the book goes on to say, here's where habit patterns are laid down from infancy. It should be our purpose to find out what these thought patterns are, and when they are unhappy or morbid or filled with fear, to change them so that the natural, normal flow of the life force itself shall be resumed. So see, there's hope. We're not helpless individuals in this thing called life. We're expressions of that light. And we have the wisdom of God, but we have to be able to uncover it to let more of the light through. Now that's the end of that quote. So, if I believed as a child that I was unlovable, how could God love me? How could that happen? And then the book, again, Living the Science of Mind, says that the sum total of our thoughts is either silently attracting good to us or repelling it from us. And I'm telling you, I was repelling a lot. Now, the belief that I was unlovable led to beliefs that I was incapable. If I'm not lovable, how can I be capable of living a successful life, of putting myself out there and letting myself be known? I've got a whole other story about that, but I won't go into it. leading to feelings of this being incapable then led to feelings of unworthiness and that lower self-esteem. It's just, it showed up in all of my experience. So if I'm not capable and I'm not worthy to receive much, pretty soon I was living in scarcity. Look at the word scarcity. Divide it after the C. Scarcity or scar city. Scarcity, scar city. We all have probably been scarred in one way or another at the subjective level. Now that doesn't give us a right to blame society or our parents or anyone else. It's simply the way the science of mind works is what we think is powerful, and then it's impressed upon the universal subjective and our own subjective mind at the feeling level, and then it gets demonstrated in some way. So, most of the time, I was unconsciously fearful that I would not be successful, that I wouldn't find someone to love me, or that I wouldn't have a good job where I could support myself. And I even denied myself not nice things because it seemed when I got them, they would break or they would be ruined or something would be taken from me. at some point in my self-discovery, I discovered a pattern that I believed I was a jinx. How can an expression of God be a jinx? But on the unconscious level, it seemed I was thwarted when I tried to do something. Well, worst of all then, the beliefs that I had accumulated, a lot of it came from early religious training, which led to a belief in duality, that I'm not one with God, that God's up there, devil's down here, and the devil must be doing something to me because I'm not succeeding the way I think I should. So, the idea that there are two powers, God, devil, right, wrong, good, bad, heaven, hell, states of mind. That's all. States of mind. I wasn't taught that I am the light of God. And I don't know how many of you were, but how fortunate for you to grow up believing that. But as I grew up, I began to notice things were really out of whack. I felt there must be something more than what I'd been demonstrating, which is always short of what I really wanted. And why was that? Because of these beliefs. So, as you can see, there's still room for the light to come through. And I believe it was that light, that something within me, the spirit, my spirit, connected to that universal, guided me to the Church of Religious Science when I was 33 years old. And when I look back now, and I see people in classes, and they're 50, 60, 70 years old, and they say, oh, I wish I'd found this teaching earlier. Then I look back at my own experience and think how lucky I was that I did find it at a younger age. So I immersed myself. How am I doing, Terry? Time? Yes, okay. I immersed my... Okay, I just have a little bit more. I have to have a drink. When I got the message, things weren't right, and I joined the church. I immersed myself in the classes. I was like a sponge. I couldn't get enough. I became the treasurer of the church. I did everything I could to be in that place. And I learned the way that the science of mind worked. And I not only learned it, I applied it. It's one thing to know God is all there is, and I am one with God. If we don't add, and I am one with that power, then the equation isn't complete. We have to know it and then be it. We have to let it flow through us. So I learned how to do spiritual mind treatment, affirmative prayer. I told you the story of me going into the closet when I saw it in scripture. It said, go into your closet in secret and pray in secret. So I did. I had a walk-in closet, and that's what I did. And I had five kids, and it was really nice in there. And then little by little, my life began to take on new life. New feelings, better self-esteem, confronting these false ideas about who I was. A jinx? Are you kidding me? No way. And then one by one, the concepts of not being lovable, incapable, unworthy, or living in fear, or a belief in duality begins to disappear. Now, I wish I could say that they've disappeared, all of them, completely. But I will confess that from time to time, issues come up. But I know what to do with them. I recognize them. I am not a receptor to letting that run my life. I do something about it. I do my meditation. I do my treatment. I do writing. I do whatever it is that I need. In my growing up years, not only did I take classes, but I took another from the Science of Mind, but there was another class called Creative Self-Awareness. And that was working with Fred Finger, who was a psychologist, and the minister in developing, you'd get the slip from, some of you are doing it, you're smiling with me. But you'd read what the psychological pattern was after taking the MMPI tests and a couple of others. And then we would couple that with treatment, using affirmations, meditation, visualization. Those are all tools that we can use. And then I did 9 weeks of a thing called the transparental process. And all of those tools helped me unload and let that light come through. And so I get to be like I am today. And I know that I'm not finished. There's more. There's more of the light that I am, that I can shine. But when I, and I continue to do my work. So, I'm going to do this. Meister Eckhart, the 12th century mystic and theologian, wrote, "God finds joy and rapture in us. And we need to find that for ourselves, because we are the joy and the light of God." And so God bless you in your journey, and Reverend Terry is going to finish up.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
So when I learned I was doing this talk with my teacher and mentor, Dr. Carolyn, I was a little unnerved. So, as everything happens in life, when I had the name of the topic, The Way It Works, things started coming at me from all different places. So yesterday I completed my talk and figured out what I wanted to say, and I decided to treat myself to a movie. So I went and saw The Greatest Showman. If you haven't seen it, you should. If we had time, I'd just show it to you. It's The Way It Works. And it's all singing and dancing like the movies from the 50s. So Jesus said, "It is done unto you as you believe." I think Carolyn just explained that all. The Science of Mind textbook says, "Ignorance of the law excuses no one from its effects." So if you don't know you're using it, you are. And Henry Ford said, "If you believe you can, or you believe you can't, you are right." So I came to the center in 1992, October. It was Halloween weekend. And in January, about 6 weeks later, Dr. Mack, who was head of the teen groups internationally, asked me to go to camp because they needed a nurse, and I was a nurse. So I said, "Okay, camp." We're going to Southern California, the beach. We'll swim. We'll sit around the campfire. We'll sing Kumbaya. And life will be great. Well, when you know this much about science of mind, and you have not done a whole lot of interpersonal growth, it's pretty daunting to be at camp, because camp is not camp. It's interpersonal growth. So I was with 100 teenagers learning while they were learning and trying to co-lead a group that I often became the leader of. One of the things we did at camp was make a vision board. I had no idea what a vision board was, but we got our board and we got our magazines and we sat and we cut out all these things. At the time, I was driving a beat-up Toyota pickup truck that my kids had wrecked twice. So I found a car, a Camry, and I put that picture on my vision board. And when I put it on my board, I said, "This represents a new car. I will never be able to afford a Camry, but a new car, and it will be paid for." I came back from camp. I immersed myself in the center. I took classes. I went to seminars. I read every book I could find. I just ate this up. And 2 years later, when I was moving and I took my bed apart, there was my vision board under my bed. Hadn't looked at it, hadn't thought about it since the day I brought it home from camp. And it probably went under the bed then. And on that vision board was the Toyota Camry. And in my garage was the exact car. When I bought it, I didn't realize it was the car in the picture till I actually looked at it. It wasn't paid for. So I had raised my consciousness enough to know that I deserved this car. Hadn't raised it quite enough to have it paid in full. So again, Spirit works for us by working through us and is us. And I think the important part of that quote from the Science of Mind textbook is, "and is us." Often in my mind, when I think about Spirit working through me, I'm in duality. It's Spirit and it's me. But that's not the truth. I am Spirit. Not all of it, but definitely a part of it. At one of the conferences I attended, I got to hear Mary Manon Morrissey speak. She's quite famous interpersonal growth person. And she told a story. So this was 25 years ago or so. And this story stayed with me. The story was that she had been in the hospital. She had kidney failure. She was told she was dying. She was in fear and angst and very much afraid of this. Her friend, Jack Boland, came to visit her. He was a Unity minister. And Unity ministers are practitioners, just like we're practitioners. She told him her story, and he looked at her and said, "Is there any part of you that believes you can be healed?" And she told him no. So he said, "Is there any part of you that can believe that I believe you can be healed?" And she thought about it, and she said, "Yes." Well, it was many years later when she was telling this story. But it shows that using a practitioner, or a person that knows the truth about you, knows you are Spirit, and can see through the gunk, the stories, to the truth, can heal us. Doesn't always mean you live, but you can be healed. I've been reading a book, The Impersonal Life, by Joseph Benner. He talks about a key, and the key is to think is to create, or as you think in your heart, so it is with you. Look at any feat you have accomplished, any picture you've painted, any particular thing or condition that is now in your life existing, and follow the thread or the idea back to where that condition came from. For me, that's easy when I look back over my teen years, my young adult years. I had a lot of the same stories Dr. Carolyn had. Sometimes when I'm in it, it's harder to follow that key, that thread. But when you can follow it, it helps you to understand how you created where you are. And for me, that helps me to release it. In Living the Science of Mind, it says, it is to combine the intellect and feeling, to move from the head to the heart. Intelligence gives form to the feeling. Unless the feeling is there, the intelligence will merely have provided an empty mold. I think this is the way affirmations work. I think when you use an affirmation, you have the thought and the feeling. Without both, you do not get the demonstration. Dr. Carolyn says T and F equals D. Thought and feeling equals demonstration. And when I put an affirmation to music, music brings it directly to my heart and helps me get my bloated nothingness out of the way so that spirit can work through me. So in order to change the external world, first we must change what's within ourselves. I'm gonna end this with a short video. The video is called Thinking Affirmatively. The speaker is Dr. King Gordon, the leader of Spiritual Centers. So my last little topic or thought is from Facebook, of all places. It's a promo for GAIA.com. Your life is just a mirror. When you put your attention on things you are passionate about, and when you start to align with those things, what you find is doors start to open. People, places, and things show up. When we connect with the universal presence, our life becomes effortless and an expression of joy. And so it is.